This is Red Eyes Radio. My name is Henrik, and you are very welcome to the program. This is Internet Talk Radio on many of the subjects that we consider to be the most important and interesting in the world. We are based out of Sweden on the Scandinavian Peninsula, but you can, of course, follow us worldwide through our website, redeyescreations.com. We are happy to have you with us today, and don't forget to tell your friends about us. Help spread the word and join us in the member section for much more radio, webcasts, and video material. And today we are going to go through the looking glass with our guest Todd Campbell from peeringthrough.blogspot.com. He's been writing a lot of on a lot of interesting subjects, and his work have been brought to my attention several times, both via the web, but also by other guests on this program. So I wanted to invite Todd on the program today to talk about his blog, the research, and to go over a few of the things that Todd has been looking into that is, in its own way, I guess, are connected to the occult, simply meaning the hidden and the more esoteric side of life. And Todd also seems to be very eclectic in the areas that he's looking into, just like you have to be these days in order to get a good perspective on the situation that we currently are in. So we have many things to discuss, so stay tuned as we are peering through the looking glass today. Welcome to the program, Todd. It's great to have you here.
Henrik, it's an exceptional honor on my part to have been invited, and I'm just excited to be here. So thanks for having me on.
It's great. We have so many different things we can talk about today. And as always, I want to, you know, talk about the beginnings, as it were, right at the start of the program. It's always interesting to hear why people start up things like blogs and their research and why they even begin to look into some of these areas at all. What would you say? What was the Kickstarter for you, as it were, Todd?
With my blog and stuff, I started the blog back in March of 2007, and it really came about through just stumbling across other people's work, quite frankly. At the time, for some reason, I was getting more and more into looking at what had happened with 9/11. And you know, the whole thing initially didn't sit right with me. And then, you know, 6 years later, still wasn't sitting right with me. And I was wondering why no one was still, or at least I was perceiving that no one was still discussing it. And so I started, you know, hunting around online and started coming across, you know, people that were still kind of talking about it. And so that kind of started things. You know, I was coming across people like Freeman Fly and Alan Watt were some of the first people that I kind of discovered that were discussing some of these topics. And so I was listening to them because they were both doing podcast type situations. And so there was a lot of information that I could get, you know, almost on a daily basis. And I had already had, you know, growing up, I was already interested in the occult and UFOs and conspiracy theories and things like that. And so it just kind of rekindled my interest in those topics.
Yes.
And then, you know, the more I started to research that, the more I saw, you know, I started discovering some other folks like Jake Kotze and Ben Fairhall. The two of those guys specifically, really, and that, you know, they were writing about some, you know, other related topics, but not specifically just 9/11.
Sure.
And saw some, you know, that they were really getting at some very interesting things and things that very much appealed to me and that I felt, you know, were a concern, frankly, in the world that we live in today. And so I got kind of inspired that I felt like I needed to do something myself. And I wasn't exactly sure at first what that was going to be. And then I was like, well, you know, I'll just start a blog. And at first I was really just looking for it to be, kind of a clearinghouse, if you will, of information. And so I had a lot of links, to various other websites for places to, for people to find more information. Mm. Cause I never really fully considered myself a writer. And I still don't to some extent. I wrote poetry and stuff in high school and in college, but I always kind of like aspired to be a writer, but I also knew that my abilities were kind of limited and, you know, didn't really think that that was going to be a career for me or anything else. Mm-hmm. But, you know, doing the blog, I started to feel like that I had some things to say and that I could bring my own perspective to a lot of these topics. And so I kind of started to ease into writing and was definitely, like I said before, very much inspired by both Jake Kotze and Ben Fairhall specifically, his writing and the things that he's looking at. Definitely jived with things that I was already thinking about as well. And so that's kind of the incarnation of why I got started doing this.
Mm, very interesting. And it's fascinating because not every single time, but in most, in many cases with people that are fairly recent, shall we say, into these types of topics, 9/11 definitely seems to be the portal, I guess, to a new dimension of our lives in a way. You know, this is the thing that opens up people to new areas and new research, and all of a sudden you're off on, well, you're through the looking glass, as it were, right, Todd?
Oh, exactly, exactly. And, you know, I do have to say that was the catalyst for me, mm-hmm. Before that, I was very much into like Richard Hoagland and his Enterprise site, about 10 years ago. I already had a history with a lot of the information, but it really was looking at 9/11 and what happened, what people's various theories about what happened, that really kind of set me off, because I was starting to get a little angry, frankly, that I felt like no one was discussing it anymore, and it's something that really got glossed over in a horrific way,
yeah,
if you ask me.
Yeah.
I think that, it is a story that has set a lot of people onto this path, and for maybe all the wrong reasons, it's a good thing, if that's what it takes to open some people's eyes, then I guess we have to look at it having some positive impact, as horrible a situation as it obviously was.
Yeah. Yeah. And as with so many things, this, with 9/11 as well, seems to be a very much an occult event, meaning that it's a hidden event in that sense. It's right there. It's in our face, obviously, but the motives, the reasons why, and what actually happened that day, again, seems to be something that is hidden or veiled to the majority of the people. We're handed the official storyline or the thing, and again, the majority are accepting that and just, swallow it, hook, line, and sinker, as they say. But was there something specific about that you, what was it with it that didn't feel right to you? Like when you watched it on TV and it's like, this is something wrong, or was it later on when the motives and the consequence of this started to unravel itself, as it were?
Right. It was probably a little bit of both. Like I said, I already had conspiratorial leanings in my belief system to begin with. And so anytime some kind of big major world event like that happens, I'm always a little bit was always a little bit skeptical about those things even before 9/11. And I certainly was that day, but I didn't, you know, not enough information had come out. Things were still very strange, especially in this country, you know, with the all the anthrax attacks that took place after that. That period of time here in the States was very strange and very surreal. You know, people were just walking around not having any concept of what might happen from any moment to the next.
Yeah, and you were on the East Coast as well at that time, so you were pretty much, well, fairly close, I guess, to the center of these events. Is that right?
I'm in the southern United States, so far enough removed from New York, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. But I had a number of friends that lived in the city, and so, you know, trying to communicate with them after it happened, you know, was kind of an immediate response, you know, trying to find out if they were okay or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that was one thing that, you know, was on my mind at the time. And then, I live about 60 miles from the CDC, Center for Disease Control, mm-hmm. which, you know, wasn't necessarily a big thing at the time, but when you live around this part of the country, you can't help but know, and it's always kind of in the back of your brain somewhere that place is really close, and that's kind of an odd and ominous thing to know,
yes.
frankly.
Yes. I mean, if we move on from there a little bit and we can keep 9/11, as it were, in the back of our heads and keep that and maybe return to that a little bit later. I mean, you're looking at a lot of different things, as I mentioned before, very kind of eclectic. And what I'd like to ask you about is what is it about certain things that kind of spark your interest? Either if we talk about, as you mentioned, like a world event like 9/11, that's a huge thing. But there are also kind of minor things going on, things that seemingly are on the surface level unimportant, but there's something, you know, that makes you react to it, or something that makes you want to research it even more. It could be, you know, a news story or whatever. But what is it about something that kind of sparks your interest? Is that more intuitive, or are you looking for something kind of specific?
It's a weird process, quite frankly, and you know, I don't even know if I can fully explain it. A lot of it certainly centers around news events, you know. So a typical day for me is kind of just monitoring the news, and you know, some stories, you know, frankly, a lot of the things that I look at, I don't even really cover on my blog. You know, a lot of the more political things, New World Order type stories that come out, you know, in terms of surveillance and our rights as citizens and things like that, they're kind of being trampled on a daily basis.
Yeah.
As much as I think those are, in a lot of ways, the most important stories that we all should be really, like, focused on, those aren't really the stories that I kind of tend to cover on my blog, mainly because I think that there are other people out there that do it quite well.
Right.
And, you know, I think, you know, people like Alan Watt, I really look to him, multiple times throughout the week. He does a fantastic job covering that stuff in a way that I don't think I could do it any more justice than he does it, frankly. And so I do tend to look for more fringe kind of topics. And, you know, it's hard to say what exactly tips me off to something, but, you know, it requires a fair amount of reading into the stories, because on the surface, like you said, it may not seem like a whole lot up front, but the closer you start to dig into the details, which requires reading a lot of, you know, news stories online of the exact same story.
Yes.
That you start to find little hidden nuggets, and a lot of which, you know, you might refer to as Twilight language, which is something that James Shelby Downard kind of came up with, and people like Lauren Coleman now kind of look at those things. So, you know, there might be a key word or a key phrase or a key name involved in a story that may have resonance on a more esoteric level. Mm. And so when you come across one of those little details, it may send up a red flag. And so you may spend a little bit more time looking at the details of the story. And oftentimes those things start to just snowball.
I'll start to cut you off, Tom, but I'm a reminder of that thing with I think there was a murder in somewhere and a consequent suicide after that, where it said in the news story that the main perpetrator, as it were, have said, is there no help for the widow's son, right? That's a key word right there, or key phrase.
Oh, yeah, correct. You know? And, I don't know, you know, I don't want to get too, you know, caught up in it in terms of, you know, any personal contributions per se, but I'm pretty sure that I was the first person to, like, write about that. Mm-hmm. when I first saw that story, you know, I brought up the article about the details, you know, within the hour that it had happened in the original details of that story. That was one of the very last things that was mentioned in the article. And I was just like dumbfounded, quite frankly, because it seemed like such a odd detail that they really chose to include in their, you know, original story.
Yes.
Covering the event. And, you know, not only was it the Masonic distress call, but the note had been typed. His entire, like, suicide note, if you will, was typed. And the distress call, the widow's son reference, was handwritten, scrawled at the bottom in handwriting as well, which is an odd detail. And I'm still not sure what went down with that. That story is very strange. In the if you go back and look at all the news reports as they were coming out over subsequent days, even. There's a lot of inconsistencies in terms of how the timing of these things. There's inconsistencies in terms of him supposedly faxing into a local television station his suicide note, and then subsequently calling the 911 and saying that he had come home and that his family had been killed. Whereas his contact with the news station, as I recall, like he basically had said that he had just killed his family. So there's some inconsistencies there, and then obviously the Masonic distress call.
Yes,
I found very interesting. In follow-up to that, and I haven't really written about it since the initial stuff, I was able to determine on some actual Masonic websites that in their kind of comment sections, actual Masons had been trying to investigate whether or not this guy was a member of any lodge. Mm. And the last details I saw was that they had had narrowed it down that he was in fact a Mason, not one of a member of one of the bigger lodges, but that he was indeed a Mason. Hmm. Which, you know, that the details of that, you know, I don't know what all that really means. I mean, it's obvious that the man was in a lot of financial troubles.
He'd lost his job recently, I think, and
yeah, both he and his wife had worked for Kaiser Permanente.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Hmm.
And were apparently, according to Kaiser, had been kind of falsifying some personal details, and so they were being let go, had been fired. So there, you know, there's just a lot of strangeness to that story, and you know, most of these stories, frankly, a lot of the stories I cover, you know, you'll never know. We'll never know what the actual details and what actually happens with these things.
Right.
But more often than not, you know, if I cover them, there's usually because there's something not quite right there, you know, in the Masonic right. connection with this story particularly, I found extremely interesting.
Right. But isn't this...
You know, like I said...
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I just want to say, isn't it also about kind of building up or building slowly up an image of all these things that aren't right, meaning that the more you pay attention to them, the easier they will become to spot the next time around? It's almost like there's a hidden connection between all these things in a weird kind of way. But what happens is that you build up and you become more savvy to spot these kind of things. Would you say that's right, Todd?
I think that's certainly the case, without a doubt. And I think that's part of the reason why myself and others that are kind of dealing with these similar topics are overwhelmed at times, because it becomes one thing after another. You know, even with this situation, like that same day, I think it was either that day or the day after that, you know, Kaiser Permanente was involved with the birthing of these octuplets. And so one piece connects to another piece.
Yes.
I don't claim to have any idea what all these things necessarily mean at the end of the day. I don't have any inside knowledge. I don't have any inside contacts or anything else. But the trail, if you will, is fascinating.
Yes.
And it is definitely pointing to something. It is taking me on a path as much as I'm taking my readers on a path. And so it kind of lays itself out to me at times. You know, I don't even have to dig that much usually. They just kind of appear, and then they usually appear in frequency.
And they're connected
one connection to it. Yes, one connection to another over a long period of time in some cases, and over a short period of time in other cases.
Yes.
And I just find that fascinating. You know, I don't know what it means. I don't know what it's signaling towards. But if nothing else, it's signaling to me to pay attention.
That's interesting. And you said that they were – this is the Kaiser Permanente that you mentioned. That's a it's a foundation as a health plan, basically, right? Or it's a consortium.
Yeah,
of-
yeah, basically. I think, you know, it's a giant health consortium.
Yes.
Which – you know, I think that they've gotten into the HMO aspect, but I think they deal with all things from insurance to actual health care. You know, it's kind of they tie all, every aspect of health into one big conglomeration. you know, probably even pharmaceuticals, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they're probably one of the biggest health organizations in the world, probably.
Mm-hmm. And so Kaiser was involved in helping to deliver these octuplets, which kind of loosely leads us into this area of the set of twins, because I think in these octuplets there were two sets of twins, weren't that right, or was it only one set of twins?
With the gentleman who killed his family and himself, he had two sets of twins in his family.
Ah, okay, that was it. All right, okay.
Yeah, he. That's how not only, you know, that story relates. Not only did he and his wife both work for Kaiser Permanente, they had two sets of twins. And then the day that happened, or that week that happened, Kaiser was in the news with the birth of those octuplets. And I haven't really followed the octuplet story much further, but that story's gotten even stranger over the past week or two. Because that woman had six previous kids prior to the birth of these octuplets.
Yeah, yeah.
And now,
that's right.
And now we're finding out all this stuff about this woman. I haven't even checked into that. I noticed something the other day about there's some weird connection that she has with Angelina Jolie or something. And I haven't, like I said, I haven't looked into that, so I don't want to go too much into it. But I did notice that there was something going on that had to do with Angelina Jolie, which I find strange. And so when I was looking at that stuff, I did start to notice that there was a number of celebrities that are also very much entrenched into the whole twin births. That there are, to me, you know, I don't know if the numbers necessarily bear it out percentage wise across the globe, but it seemed to me that there are a large number of people that are celebrities or in the entertainment field that are either twins themselves or give birth to twins. I found that interesting.
Yes, and there is another kind of weird, interesting news story that I know that you also picked up on, and that was the story about the twins and the city in was it Argentina, you know, with possible connection to some kind of genetic experimentation that had been going on by Mengele. You know, the story goes that through the rat lines, a lot of Germans managed to escape to South America and set up their little, you know, colonies, as it were, over there. And this news story described that there was in one city, very many twins being born, kind of off the chart if you compare it to other regions and cities. And of course, the whole Kaiser story kind of connects in with the Nazi story as well, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, that was definitely it. And, you know, the thing was is that all these stories were coming out simultaneously.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be one thing if they were spaced out over 6 months or, you know, even a few months. But with these kind of topics, you know, part of why it's so fascinating to me is because we're seeing them just come out one after the other, and they all have some connection to one another in some form or fashion. And so, yeah, that story was in Brazil, some small
Brazil, that's right. Yeah.
Community in Brazil, which, yeah, directly connected with Mengele. And, you know, the book and then subsequent movie, The Boys from Brazil, is basically a story about that specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, scientifically, they came out and tried to do a really good job of debunking that whole story that was based on some gentleman has written a book, I guess, about that community. But yeah, and so the kind of Nazi science is something that is definitely related to that, obviously, but it's something that I kind of find in the fringes running throughout a lot of news stories that we're seeing over the past year or so, which is a little unnerving. I haven't really gone into investigating it in one full investigation just of that particular aspect, but a lot of my articles, I end up having to throw something in there that because there's always some underlying Nazi something going on with a lot of the stories that I end up like looking at,
right,
which.
Right.
Yeah, it's a little scary. I don't know what to make of it, but it does seem to be recurring for what that's worth.
And this thing about the twins as well is pretty interesting. As you mentioned, a lot of celebrities, I think they were even mentioning about the fact that twins is something that seem to run in families. Again, something that certain families just have, a set of genetic properties that allow people to have twins, basically. And again, a lot of celebrities were having it. You were picking up on that. And the motif, again, of the twin is pretty interesting in a kind of, again, more kind of occult or esoteric aspect. If we even take, Elvis, for instance, he had a twin mm-hmm. that passed away when he was younger. And that's also kind of a motif that has been, that has also have an occult kind of background, if you will. It's like the dark aspect of your self or the shadow contact or your other half, in a way, is kind of has died off, right? And the person goes out into life and is continually looking for the other half of him or herself.
Elvis's or Lisa Marie Presley just had twins herself.
There you go. Exactly. There you go.
Yeah. So it's one thing after another. And, when that starts to come up here recently, then you can't help but look back and go, 9/11, the Twin Towers.
Mm.
It's the universe or somebody sending messages to pay attention. That's really what I get from my own research, is just and something that I try to stress to just people that I talk to on a daily basis, is pay attention to what's going on around you. Don't just take the evening news or the headline of whatever web page or newspaper or whatever it is that you go to for your news, don't take it all at face value. Because we're not getting the whole story about much of anything. And so you have to be aware of your surroundings yourself. You have to be proactive about the news and how it filters into your brain.
Yes, absolutely. And you can also kind of decode or interpret a lot of the stories in that type of context, because just as you mentioned previously, I would very much agree that it seems to be either consciously again or unconsciously somewhere in between messages are being dropped, shall we say, that in some way is trying to communicate a message to those who are aware enough to pick up on it. I can try to pick out an example here a little bit later on, because I know there's tons of them, and it can be, as you said before, Todd, it can even be a little bit overwhelming. You don't know where to begin almost. It's like you just have to sit down one day and scan it, either watch the TV news or watch the news wires online or whatever. And there's, in many cases, something very, very interesting going on with the names or with the locations or with the dates or even the numerology. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think, you touched on it a little before, that the more you look and the more aware you are of it, the easier it becomes.
Yes.
You're able to pick up on these little subtle clues or messages, if you will. And I tend to think that there is something to that, the whole concept of that messages are being related through these stories and through these events. Growing up and through high school, I was very much a reader and lover of William S. Burroughs, and his whole concept of the cut-up theory is very much, to me, in line with that, because he felt that through cutting up, or like what I do is basically going through a news story and pulling stuff out of it. I'm not physically cutting up and rearranging in the same way that he did with his writing, but what he felt was that when you de-scramble the original message, or the message as it's presented to us, that there are messages contained within that that are the actual message.
Yes.
That the actual message is contained within the original, what we think of as the original, although what's embedded inside of it is actually the original message. And that, so I was always kind of fascinated with his theory about what the cut-ups were about. And I see it at work now, you know, on a different scale. Like I said, I don't write in cut-up method, but that's how I go about kind of tearing these stories apart. And so I think that, yeah, the idea that there's messages being related or transferred is a valid one in my mind anyway.
Yes. I'm just, as we speak here, I'm just reading a little bit more on the mother of the octoplets. She was called Nadia Suleiman, I think. And again, just to give an example here of a little piece of the puzzle, as it were, she was apparently, let's see here, I'm going to read here. She had, it says on the Wikipedia thread, she resorted to an IVF procedure, and that means, of course, that she was. Oh, let's see if I can find the relationship. She was using a sperm donor. That's what that means, basically. She was, not doing in the natural way, as it were.
And right. So in vitro fertilization.
There you go. Thank you for clarifying that. Looking for that term there. But anyway, what ended up happening here is that the donor's name supposedly was David Suleiman, which is, you know, kind of interesting, which again gives us a little bit of clue of things that potentially might be going on here. Suleiman, of course, referring to the old king, as it were, of the Temple of Solomon, all that stuff. And that was one that resulted in four single births and one fraternal twin births. There were four boys and two girls born between 2001 and 2006. It carries on from there, but just one little more thing to add to all of this stuff, you know, that there's endless of details throughout this stuff. And again, small little hints sent to the person who can't put a name or a place or something else in context. It might not mean so much, right? But to those who have an eye on the occult, the esoteric, have a little bit of historical and esoteric knowledge, the story just goes on and on and on. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, certainly. Well, and you know, if you want to look, that's great that you just pulled that out, because you can also look at Kaiser Permanente itself. I mean, what does that name relate? Permanent king.
Yeah, there you go. And I'll start to cut you off here, but I got to read this again. The baby's names, of course. Listen to these. These are in order here. Noah, Malaya, Isaiah, Naraya, Micaiah, Josiah, Jeremiah, and Jonah. I mean, okay.
Now, if that's not loaded, I don't know what it is.
No, there you go. So, there we go. It's incredible.
So with the other thing related to that and to back to the murder-suicide that took place of the gentleman and his wife who used to work for Kaiser Permanente, the Kaiser Permanente logo is basically, it looks like three heads and then like a ray like kind of a sun ray behind the three heads.
Yeah.
And if you look at the, to me, you look at the symbology of the three heads, what comes to mind for me is the Masonic idea of the three unworthy craftsmen.
Ah. Hmm.
And so when you link that to his Masonic cry for help, if you will,
yeah.
at the end, there's something interesting there. So three unworthy craftsmen are usually kind of the scapegoat, if you will, for in a Masonic assassination situation.
Yes, yes.
And so I found that fairly interesting in the connection with Kaiser and this particular story.
Absolutely, it's like a trinity or an unholy trinity in that sense, and even
that too, exactly. Yes, you could also look at it that way. Yeah,
and the sun is rising from the the bottom of the logo of those three heads or three busts, as it were. So again, it's all these small little hints here and there, and again, this is something that carries on. I mean, I know if you go back to the whole twin motif again, that's also something that has been prominent throughout. Human mythology. We can talk about it in the Roman context of the Lupercalia, I think it's called. If I might, slaughter that term pronunciation wise,
I think that sounds good to me.
That sounds good to you. Okay, and again, the twin motif is something that is prominent of the two sons. Even the Lakota Indians, I think it is, who are having that, or it might be the Lakota. But again, it's to go back to that idea of what the communication is all about, what it is that it's trying to tell us. Have you, thought more about that? Is this just the way things are and have always been, do you think? Or do you think that we're kind of being just loaded with these messages now because the news is, it's global coverage. We can get instantaneously from, one area to another. We can pretty much a good idea, so to speak, of what is going on around the planet. And do you think that just speeds on this cycle and contributes to this type of symbolic interpretation of the events?
That's a really great question. And I think you probably hit on it yourself, frankly. I do think that this stuff has been around. It is not like it's something new, obviously. And so the fact that we do have just instantaneous media coverage overwhelmed with the ability online, cable, television, it's constant. And so I think the fact that we're seeing it, people like myself and others who are investigating this, the fact that we're seeing it on such a regular basis probably in some ways has to do more with the fact that there's just so much out there. There's so much news.
Yeah.
Even news that's not news. We're just inundated with it minute after minute. You can spend an entire day online and the stories are just coming fast and furious all day long. Mm. There are people that just sit and do nothing but crank out every little detail of everything that's happening around the globe from minute to minute, which is a maddening concept.
Yeah, that's right.
So we're seeing it with more frequency because we're exposed to it on a daily basis. In a way that humankind has never seen before.
Mm.
Do I think that it's probably more significant now than it's ever been? Something tells me yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Now that may be just because I'm in the middle of it and involved with it intimately at this time in this place, but it's not just me. You wouldn't be doing your show if people all around the planet weren't p- picking up on these kind of things as well.
Exactly.
So that to me says something. I don't work on kind of a theoretical level. And there are a lot of people out there that do. I know that, and that's great. For whatever reason, I don't concern myself so much with trying to come up with some grand theory about what I think all of it means. Do I think about what the ramifications of these things are, or what they may be pointing towards are? Yeah, but in my own work, I'm not trying to work up a real specific theory about, you know, I figured out what all this means, because I don't think that's possible.
Well, I like that idea also, because I also think that what you're doing is that you are, when you're doing the type of work that you're doing, you're consequently developing your own theory in a way. You haven't like set out an idea about something or a thesis, and then you set out to kind of try to prove that or whatever. But this is something that probably is going to grow, and the more and more you look at it, the more and more a picture for you, so to speak, will start to emerge, and things will become more and more clear for you as you kind of lay the puzzle of this weird kind of picture. And, you know, what do you think at this point, though, that it's trying to tell us, if you will? I mean, I can think of things like to basically and simply show us the weird and wonderful kind of interconnectedness on everything, be it, you know, the news stories, be it whatever it is. Again, I think it doesn't matter really what we look at, because if we have a detailed and focused enough eye on these things, we're going to discover it basically everywhere. What do you think about that, Todd?
I think that is certainly one good way to look at it, that we are able to look at this stuff and go, you know, wow. It is kind of a wow factor that the world, the universe is working on some kind of symbiotic level with everyone that's here. And so you do get a sense that everything really is connected at one level. That's one. The wow factor is one way to look at it.
Yeah.
The other way to look at it for me, which I try not to dwell on, I think, you know, I touched a little bit on this before. I try not to dwell on the future ramifications of events that are taking place on the planet right now.
Mm-hmm.
But in my own personal belief, I do believe that there is a controlling, ruling elite on this planet that are looking to dominate the globe on a scale that we've never seen before. And I do personally believe that.
Yeah.
I try not to dwell on it too much in my writing, but it is a personal belief. So that's the other way to me of looking at what some of these things may be pointing towards. I don't like to be a fear peddler, and I know that in the conspiracy community, or however you want to talk about it, I think that there is certainly a split and a divide amongst people that feel like dealing with that kind of stuff is dangerous and is only going to enhance that kind of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other people that feel like, you know, you kind of have to be happy-go-lucky with this stuff, and then it's all just like tricks of the universe or something, you know.
Right.
And there's definitely a split
that I think is
pretty apparent for anyone that follows this material and the people that work.
Absolutely.
With this material.
And I would say it's very much up to the observer of the material as well, because as far as I can tell of all of this is very much about the interpretation of the material and what type of perspective that you're coming from. And again, also what you're trying to enforce or verify, rather, I should say, that the worldview that you're kind of either you're setting out to prove one worldview or you're setting out to prove another worldview. And as you say, I guess that you then come from a background where you try not to do that too much, but just kind of look at it and see, you know, what the image is, what actually slowly kind of evolves or is emerging there. Because again, it's very difficult to have objectivity, if I can say it like that, because again, a lot of the material that we're going into is always being passed through the subjective filter, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. And I do feel like I try to stay somewhere in the middle. I don't try to push one side or the other too hard. Like I said before, I have my own personal beliefs about the world and about what we're experiencing. Mm. But I try to stay somewhat objective in terms of the way I present the material. You know, I have an agenda, sure. Everybody has some sort of an agenda. I'm not suggesting that I don't, that my own personal beliefs about these things don't influence what I'm covering or how I may choose to cover it. But with most things for me, I bring what I kind of refer to as reasonable skepticism to pretty much any of these things. I'm a fairly reasonable skeptic about pretty much everything, because until I've experienced something firsthand for myself directly, it's impossible for me to vouch too much one way or the other on anything. Right. You know, anything like UFOs is a really good example. I'm a reasonable skeptic. It's like I some part of me wants to believe in UFOs, and I feel like that there's so much firsthand accounts and evidence out there that there has to be something going on. But at the same time, I've never had what I can reasonably say was an actual experience.
Hmm. Yeah.
I experienced something as a child, but I don't know if it really happened. I don't know where it came from. Mm-hmm. I don't have anybody that can verify my experience. And I'm young, so my memory of what may or may not have happened is sketchy at best at this point in my life. And so I'm a reasonable skeptic. That's, you know, and I kind of approach any of these things kind of from that same place.
That's interesting, and we might want to definitely return to that a little bit more later and talk about it if you're up for it. But I do want to ask if you want to carry on with us here in the member section. I know that we haven't kind of got into a lot of more, I guess we can call it examples or more details. There are a few areas that we possibly can get into in relation to some of the work that we've been discussing so far with the wolf moon that we had back in January, and the connection to many of these things we already talked about. But we can talk about Sirius, the symbology of the trident. I know that you made some really interesting connection with the whole Helter Skelter story, the Mumbai, terrorism attack, 9/11, and on it goes, as it were. So, Todd, what do you say? Do you want to carry on with us here in the second hour?
Sounds fantastic. You've got me.
Sounds very good. Okay, awesome. Hey, Todd, let's do like this before we listen to some music here and take a little break here for the second segment. Mention your blog, your address, so people can follow along in your work. And if there's anything more you'd like to mention in connection to that, please go ahead.
Okay, so yeah, my site is Through the Looking Glass, and the address is www.peeringthrough.blogspot.com. And there, aside from just, you know, my articles that I try to write as frequently as I can, as difficult as that can be sometimes with working full time, there's also a lot of great links there to other writers, various topics, and other podcasts of shows that like yours deal with a lot of these same issues. You'll find all kinds of information there, as well as my writing.
Wonderful. Again, the website is peeringthrough.blogspot.com, and we will have this linked up on Red Eyes Creations, so we can find a link easily, and a little bit other sources and so forth that we've been talking about here in the first hour here. But we will continue talking more now in the member section. We'll just take a short break, listen to some music. So, Todd, thank you very much for joining us. Stay with us, and we'll be right back. More with Todd Campbell coming up for our members. We are going to continue our discussion and primarily focus on the Mumbai terrorist attacks in India and tie it in with the moon and the werewolf. We'll also talk more about Joker symbolism from the Batman sequel, The Dark Knight, Heath Ledger, school shootings and other killings with possible ties to mind control. We'll talk about what is going on and for what possible reason. Go to redicecreations.com, click on subscribe, and find out how to tune in. I also want to mention that if you are making your own music and want to have it played on Red Ice Radio, we are interested in hearing from you. Simply go to our radio archive, click on bumper music at the top, and read more about how to get in contact with us. Here's some Kenny Rogers for you. We'll talk more after this break.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky. I just dropped in. See what condition my condition was in.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I pushed my soul in a deep dark hole and then I followed it in. I watched myself crawling out as I was crawling in. I got up so tight I couldn't unwind. I saw so much I broke my mind. I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Thank you.